Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SWP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702, or search for SFU On Call or Starfleet Universe On Call. Or you can join us in the lovely chat room and the video feed from twitch.tv. Yes, we're over on twitch.tv. Go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call and you will find us there. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter while it's still alive, you can follow me on sfuoncall, you know, same spelling. Also, Paul Franz, that's PAULFRANZ. There is no T in that. And also, Franz Games, again, no T in that. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. The call to arms, Starfleet Reinforcements 1 is now available for people. You can get it on one of the e-tailers, or you can actually get a hard copy. Just go to Starfleet Games, their store online, their online store, and you'll be able to purchase it from that. Moving onward and forward to the online tournament, SWP Online Tournament, which is Sapphire Star 13. Signups are open. I opened them up earlier this week. Currently, there's seven people signed up so far. We just need, nine more. Is what we need to fill out the tournament. I will be sending out an email this weekend to just remind people that they were looking for signups to join this lovely tournament. When it comes to online client stuff, I've actually been working on online client. Added a trail support. So basically, the last 20 moves you'll be able to see what you or your opponent's last 20 moves were. If people want that extended some, I can extend it. But I want to first put it out there and get responses on that to see how people like it, how people don't like it, what they want changed about it, and so forth. I'm open to suggestions, but obviously you can do it before I send it out there, but I'm hoping to get more back when I actually ship the update, which I'm hoping to do this weekend. When it comes to another tweak I'm not sure if I'll get it for this release, might have to wait until next release, which is changing the board settings from being the individual menus items to being a board settings window. I think that will work out better, and just have it so that when you modify the settings, what it does, it will automatically change the settings on the window, the board, so that you actually can see how it changes things automatically. You can see how it adjusts things and possibly make it easier for some people to work with the board settings. Also, I'm going to be working on tweaking the toolbar. I want to have it so that it works well both in the horizontal, but more importantly, the vertical position, because I want to have it so that the vertical position is more of the default position when it comes to when you first join the game, join SFB Online. Moving onward and forward to the library report. When it comes to the SFB Online library, there's no updates to it. We still have where we were always have been, which is 76% completed. The ones that we have not converted to the third gen are the Omegas, and those are stuck where they are just because ADB has not sent us those backgrounds, and I don't think ADB is concerned about getting those converted as any others. But we do have progress with the FedCom library. I did have a chance this past week to work on that some. So now we're up to squadron side ships of 543 and fleet side ships of 437. Hopefully I can get more of that done this weekend so that we can possibly, maybe at some point, actually complete the whole set of FedCom cards that have been done. The one thing that's been holding up some of this is just getting the information about the cards, i.e. Movement cost, turn mode, all that stuff that's on the ship card itself. I was not given the whole ship card. I was just given the background image of the ship card with it, where certain things removed so that, you know, you can't use it online. Just steal the online card and use it. There's a lot of things that are missing from the online card. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and all, Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have, of course, moi. We have Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Good evening.
Good evening. Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. Reload. And, of course, we have the one, the only, the Doug. How you doing, Doug?
Hey, how's everybody doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, though. Twitch is acting like a screwball. It's not my stream, but it looks like it's the player on my iPad. Not sure why that's going on. But anyhow, to adjust things just a bit, the topic actually for this evening was something relatively simple because of, actually, I've been working on it lately, which is the online client. And those of you who are listening to the podcast, you've heard some of my news items, including one which I know Doug's aware about, which is the addition of Trails. Right now, I've got it set so that it will only save your last 20 positions so you can tell where you were the last 20 moves. It does not save every single move that you did for the entire game, which I think is nuts. To me, it's a better idea is just like 20 last moves. I think that's perfectly fine. Obviously, I'm going to put that out there. And then after I put it out there, I will see how people like it, how the people don't like it, things like that, and maybe adjust things. I've already had a request, which is the ability to set the color based on the I don't think you said based on the ship. Just said set the color. Let me just do a quick. I can do a quick check because I'm actually still logged into Facebook. Wrong one. That's that one. The comment was, I'm sure it's not beyond the realms of programming to have a different color for different paths. I'm assuming he means for different ships, and not actually different paths that the ship, a single ship takes, because that's kind of nuts.
Yeah, that would be illogical.
Yeah, it's illogical in my mind. I think it makes no sense whatsoever.
No.
So,
can you number them instead? Coloring them as well?
I mean, coloring.
Give them a unique ID?
Coloring them in how way? In what way?
When you track it in the program, it's have a unique ID, so then you can cross them without having to worry about it. And if you change the color on it, then it's more of a visual thing where people can see where the paths cross. So you don't get confused about which path went which way.
Right.
I think that's what he was talking about with the different colors idea.
Right. So basically different color trails for different ships.
Not for different turns or anything like that. Although you could do it turn by turn, different colors, just to make it simpler.
Yeah, but at the same time, the problem with having too many of those moves saved up is it takes up more and more memory for each ship. Right now, what I've just done is I have just the last 20, so it's a queue. So after the 20th position then is saved off, if you go to the 21st, then the first one gets dropped, And to my, I think that's a better idea, is to have it so that it just has a limited number of last, where you were last, you know. Obviously, after I put it out there, I'm going to see what the response is, and I might adjust things a bit for people. The color thing, I might be able to do that before I put it out there. Maybe that might be the second revision, you know, to see how people like it in general the first way. But okay, one thing I was figuring to talk about, I was reading the chat room, and they're saying that Mike was mentioning the trails are tough to follow, and if too long, just look at a famous nibble battle diagrams, confusing it as all get go. If time frame is too large, example battle of the Java Sea, becomes a tangle web of spaghetti and hard to follow.
Oh yeah.
And he said, could each line be slightly different, since usually not so many ships in a fight, or maybe color and pattern combinations.
You could always do something like say a 5-pixel wide ribbon, and the pixels on the edge, the first and the fifth pixel, would be the same color as the background of the counterpiece, and then you could use a pattern in the center three to differentiate between which ships. You could even use a 3-pixel pattern for things like drones and plasma.
Yeah, you gotta be careful. I agree that the problems will come into being when you have multiple ships following the same trails, you know, going along the same hexes. That I can see it as being a difficulty.
The other way to deal with it is to build a heat map, so to speak, and color the entire hex with a fairly high alpha, so that if you've got five ships in a super stack, well, then you've got then it converges when they come together, and when they divert, and then the alpha almost disappears, as well as further back in time. There are a few ideas around the option, but it's not bad. Another thing that might be of value, particularly to some people, is if you were to the client doesn't actually track that. I'm sorry. I was going to say, if you could put a bug ahead of the ship at how many hexes before its turn mode is satisfied, so you'd know how much farther a ship has to go forward before it can turn again.
But right.
Your client doesn't track that.
Yes, it does.
It tracks illegal turn modes.
Yes. It will.
Well, then putting a.
It will remind you that, like, of course. Here's the thing, of course, which is that'd be an estimated, because you five hexes directly forward is an estimation.
That's just it. It's just like a leading reticle on dogfight simulators. In that case, it's not accurate. It's just an idea of how much farther the ship has to go before it can turn again, and that would be certainly useful to the side in question. And it's valuable information for the other side. Now, mind you, it's going to get changed if you have a mid-course speed change that changes your turn mode bracket. But it's just one of those little details that might add significant value.
Mm-hmm. Understood. And obviously, they say that you just turn and you have five more hexes before you can turn. If it's five hexes ahead, five hexes ahead could be off the map, number one.
True, it could be.
And two, five hexes ahead might not be where you're going to be because of side slips and so forth.
But of course. I mean, like I said, it's as a quick reference, it might have some value.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Okay, that's good. Let's call it a head turn marker. I think that's actually it's a good idea, especially as part of the whole part of why I want to tweak the client is that when it comes to the client, I want to have it so that it's more modern. You know, I want to get back to that work that I started a few years ago now. I started it and I stopped, and I'm trying to get started on it again. And one of those things was trails. That's something more modern. Also, there's some certain things that I was just thinking about today, which is basically the initial board, the initial setup, the default setup when someone joins. You know, signs up for SFB Online, for the online client, you know, downloads it, and installs it, and then starts a game room, which I might have to help in that category to a certain degree. But what's the default settings? What's going to be the most pleasing to someone who comes in and goes, you know, okay, looks at it, goes, okay, not, you know, if not wow, because I'm not sure I can get wow. At the very least, it can go, okay, yeah, this is cool. You know, it looks nice and so forth. Well,
the first thing I always do is I go through the effort to change the map to something that's more akin to the Starfleet Battles basic map, and then change the grid lines and the map text colors. Mm-hmm. And that's just me. I know some people like a more dark mode to save their eyesight, and we've swapped messages about the various options for themes. Mm-hmm. And that there isn't really a dark mode option, but that's another place that you could really make it look more modern and less Windows Vista.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. Okay, give me a sec here. Let me bump. And actually, give me that. And see if I can go here and go here. Go get that. Okay. Now, go like this. Go like this. Like that. Okay. Give me a sec. I'm not sure if you're watching. Actually, you're probably not watching Twitch. But let me bring it up. Dun, 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 come on. Log in. Thank you. Let's bring up a new game room. And okay, because I did find something that's relatively easier on the eyes. Some of it won't be adjusted because of, for example, the icons, you know, for the toolbar, those don't change, even in the darker mode one. Let me do, and I should be able to do this, I think. I've really got to change those numbers. Yep, that's what I thought. There it is. On right now, what I've got is on Twitch. I'm showing basically it's a dark mode kind of look and feel. It's a bit more modern, I think. So some of the things I want. Okay, I was talking about on the news, which is changing some of the like the default colors for like one thing for board settings, instead of having the way I have it, which is it's a bunch of menu items. I want to have board settings just to have a window, have that pop up, and then you can adjust the settings. And as you adjust the settings, it will automatically redraw the board so you can see how the settings affect what it looks like. Come on. There it goes. Like that. So, and okay, I want to, which is show chat area. Because I'm trying to come up with initial settings that are most pleasing to people. You know, do I have like the game control window? Do I have that automatically up? Well, I was thinking about not and just having it hidden to begin with. Having so that like the chat area is automatically shown at the bottom of the screen. I'm trying to make it look like a modern game window, you know, game setup from the beginning. I was thinking about also going with this and
is it floating
there?
Is everything floating?
Maybe is everything floating?
Like you just pick the one thing up and moved it across the thing. Can you do the same thing with the chat?
Well, you can't click and okay, you can't click and drag, but you can move it. Like you can have this so it's over here, which actually I know Les LeBlanc, he likes his over here. I personally think it's ugly just because I understand it. I understand why he does it. Makes perfect sense because of there's less room up and down, more room side to side. But when you have the chat room over here on the right hand side, okay, I forget. And do that split vertical. So now you've got your up here is going to be your people. This is going to be your chat room area. And so you can have it so it's on the side, but then of course a lot of the text is designed to be long. So it just goes here and wraps around a lot in this window, which is why I find the setup ugly for me. You know, so I always have it options. There it is. I think it looks better at the bottom of the screen. Maybe I'm wrong about that. You know, certain things about this. You know, the toolbar. I want to. Okay. Goodbye. What I want to do actually with the toolbar itself is get like this, the whole big send feedback box, get rid of that. I want to have it so it's a small little box. Probably get rid of the rolling of the dice. Not sure. And impulse, I want to keep that, but I want to see if I can tweak it so it's smaller. Because I want this side one to be very small. Because currently the toolbar is completely meant to be up top here. If you look at it, that's the way it's designed. But I think most modern games, they usually have the toolbar on the side. If I call it correctly. Oh, geez. I should have made this a private room. Hi. I'm not. So that's why I want one of the things I wanted to discuss was ideas to make things look a little more modern. You know, things that I can tweak that I have not thought of already. As Jeff already pointed out, for the one, which is the the idea of, yeah, thank you. And that is the, okay, let me load the game, and that's going to be this guy. Yes, yes. Oh. And to the board settings, show trails. So, you know, for example, maybe the default, having the default theme for the client to be the dark theme. To have the default board, have a black board with the green, because I think this kind of is cool. This kind of neon board is what it is, which I think makes it a little more I think it makes it feel to me more modern versus the default currently is black. I think it's black. Yeah, black or dark gray. I forget which. With white lines. So basically, it's trying to simulate the actual board. So instead of trying to simulate an actual board, I just want to duck something. Okay, let's make sure. Okay, hold on. There. Okay. You can't be doing that, Jeff.
I can't help it when the connection drops.
Oh, I understand, but the problem is when your connection drops, I don't know you're dropped if I'm not watching the screen. I can't show the client and watch the screen for talk show at the same time. No, well, it's
my
not
bad.
Your fault. It's
my bad.
You know, it's not always used. It probably talks to itself.
As I recall, setting up the client recently with the current release version, the default map is white space with black lines.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yep. But as I'm sure you heard me say, I like to have it a little more modern, you know, probably darker, because I think especially these days, I think most people are look like a dark theme.
Yeah, it looks a lot better. And you're right, it has that LED grease pencil neon board look that has that modern feel to it.
Mm-hmm. And that's also one of the reasons, there's another reason I want to change the board settings, you know, the colors and things like that. I'm not sure why I even have this suppress the waiting for window, because I don't think I've heard anyone complain about that. I can see this, but even that, I don't think many people can even touch it, even know about the suppress the echo movement. Of course, I think some people, they don't want that to be suppressed at all, because they want to see every single move, you know, and have it logged, you know. But, you know, because if I change these settings here to be within a window, one of the things I can do with that is that I can, instead of just having these limited number of colors here, you know, these are just the standard colors within Java itself. What I was thinking about doing is adding another one down here, kind of thing, is just have a drop down, and then that last item would be custom. The color would be custom, because I checked the actual code itself, and it saves the actual color, not actually like a color index, but just the color itself, the RGB color. So if people want to, then they could actually tweak the color. Maybe they don't like that. Don't like this neon green. They wanted the darker green, or they don't like any of the default colors, but they want some custom color. But you know, most people, I would think, don't want, you know, oh, I want to tweak it to be this one shade of black or this one shade of orange, you know,
Well, don't forget, some people have color blindness that requires different and odd color combinations for maximum clarity.
Yeah. Oh, understood.
So having a user specifiable customization routine is going to be a value add.
Understood. Yeah, as is, you know, there's already quite a bit of customizations when it comes to outside of the UI itself. You know, meaning like this, you know, what the window color is and things like that. You know, as I mentioned a little earlier, I found a dark like look and feel, and it works quite well, I think. I'm certain things I'm not quite as thrilled about in the way it looks for me personally, and that's why I usually switch to the Mac Mac OS 10, which is usually the default for the Mac operating system. And say for Windows, they have the Windows default and so forth. I forget for Linux, it is Metal. I think it's Metal. I think that's what the look and feel is called. It's weird. But it works, you know, and I know Les LeBlanc, he actually uses that. And as Les pointed out, in the Facebook page for SLB Online, I posted this little nugget. Actually, the trailer was a little bit longer. And that is that Vassal did it. Well, actually, I kind of saw his, video of a game he was showing. And I went, you know, I kind of like the way that looks. So I said, oh, I wonder if I can do that. And I found it and said, yep, I can do it. And there was actually some of the code I'm probably going to remove, because I just noticed that I have the same idea of storing the movement path. But I got to find out why that's for. It might be for something else. Movement path might actually be for like play by email kind of thing, where you can store what the movement is going to be for your ship at the start of the turn. So, you know, pre-plotted movement, basically. So that's one of those things that I would, if it's not being used, I might remove it later. I might move it. At the moment, I might just leave it in there just because of, as I said, I have to figure out why I put it in there. That's one of those issues overall. And that is that when you don't work on a project on a weekly, if not, you know, at the very least monthly basis, you forget what certain parts of the system do and how it works. So I have to go back and
yes, the doom of legacy code.
Yep. Even when the legacy code is written by you.
Especially when the legacy code is written by you. You've got no one else to blame.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, why doesn't the developer document this better? Oh, wait a minute. I'm the developer.
No. yeah, I know a little bit about that. I kept something, yeah. a site running on PHP 4 for many, many years after it was unwise to do so, because I couldn't figure out exactly why the code was breaking whenever I would update to a modern version of of PHP.
Oh,
I finally fixed it, but yeah. I am not without sin.
Agreed there. I'm sorry. PHP scares the living crap out of me. And I don't think it's actually PHP itself that scares me. It's what people do with PHP. people who normally, please don't take any offense to this, Jeff, are invariably lazy in their coding practices when it comes to.
Well, that's not offensive. That's accurate.
Yeah. You just described humanity.
Yep.
I mean, if we were worried about how lazy we were going to be, we wouldn't be programming a computer to do our work for us.
Oh. Yeah. I was going to set up the lazy awards the other day, but I just didn't feel like it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I kept putting off our nominations for the procrastination awards, so.
Oh, jeez.
One thing on look, I think it should be a little darker on the gray to make the white pop out more. And where you're moving things around, like your chat box, mm-hmm. if they could detach and you could like put that separate of the screen altogether, like off to the side.
Of course you
can. I mean, it doesn't have to be in the same box.
No.
That might be really nice.
Well,
yes. If you can break it out so that all of the individual elements can be separated out and have their panes unlocked from the main window so you could reposition everything, that would allow you to leave the logging window on the wide portion of the bottom or the top of the screen as you want it, and then you wouldn't have all the wasted real estate underneath the quick menu that shows up with who has and hasn't moved in a given impulse.
Yeah, like for instance, what I was starting to say earlier was when I work in PaintShop Pro, it has unlockable panes basically. So I have different, you know, setting things that I'll literally just pull out and set to the side. They're not in the same box. They're separate of the box where I'm doing the work, but I can still refer to them. And they don't clutter up and make the main spot of where I'm working tiny.
This would be especially useful if you could span monitors with it.
Look. Well, you can't span.
There's a huge difference in.
Yeah. Continue to. Sorry.
And when you squish one thing because it's being confined in the box, that makes it look like, you know, 1980s kind of stuff, 1990s kind of stuff. But if you pull it out and can set it to the side, aside from the program, the main window where you've got that, then that is a more modern kind of thing and much more utilitarian, I think.
You can do that now. Every single one of these tabs can be its own separate window. You can have the board as a separate window. This chat area, you can't make that as a separate window, but you can make that in the way you can. You just have the chat taking over this entire screen and just remove the rest of these things and make them separate, you know, floating windows. So I know some people who've actually have moved it so that the board is actually on a separate screen.
If you've got a game where you pull your SSDs off to the side and you can have those sitting out to the side and you have your map in the middle, and then you can have your chat thing completely separate of that, then I think that would look really nice.
You can do that now. The only thing is that, this is my right now
in the box.
Okay, what's that? I'm sorry.
You pull that all the way aside where it's not in the box at all.
But you're not in the box at all.
Reduce the map windows so that there's no overlap.
You can't
pull it like all the way out of the program. Like take it to the left or the right, and see you're still in that box.
You like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the problem that I'm having in looking at this is if I have this on one of my monitors and I've got the map and I pull the Klingon box, the SSD, completely out of that where it's not interfering with the program.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice if there was some way to snap edges of these panes without relinking them. So when you go to position the map screen, as you've got on the screen right now, you could anchor it in the, say, the upper left corner, then you could take your SSD and then anchor it to the right edge of the map pane without locking it inside the map pane.
Okay.
So you have the map, the entire size of the program, and then have your SSD outside of that and, like, off to the side. Like, when, like I said, when I'm working with PayShot Pro, I'll pull up, say, a window like the SSD for one of the my pallets, and I'll set it completely aside of the program. It's still connected to the program, but it's not connected to the box that I'm working in to do the work on the actual image.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm trying to picture, because...
I wasn't sure if I got that kind of...
Because I understand what Jeff is pointing out, which is basically the whole idea of this SSD is not a floating window by itself. It, this area here is inside this window here. Whoops. Thank you. This window here, but it's connected like right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only so much configurability I could do that. It gets configurability gets kind of quirky at that point.
Well, one of the things I keep coming back to is when you're looking at the map screen, the one you're manipulating right now,
mm-hmm.
is the log portion of that screen locked inside that same frame with the map?
You mean this, or do you mean the chat room, chat area?
The chat window. Is that permanently locked inside the map?
This
or
one,
could you separate that out as a separate pane?
This one is.
Yes.
But.
Okay.
You have this one. Now, in theory, there's a lot of stuff you can remove here. Okay, leave that.
That's the window I tend to. That's the window with the log that I tend to use more than anything else, to be honest, because I'll leave that on the right side of my screen where you've got your SSD. I'll have it the full height of the available screen, but a quarter or less than the width, and then use the rest of it for the map. And I'll push the log pane over there down as low as it'll let me go to maximize the amount of visible map I've got. But that's just the way I set it up.
Mm-hmm. Because in theory, it would be, I could have it so that the chat room is just a separate floating window.
Right.
Right, and what I'm saying is break that out into more elements of it that can be broken out and set aside as separate windows.
Well, what elements? I'm not sure what elements you're talking about. Because every single one of these tabs can be broken out, including the board. The board can be a completely and separate window.
When you break it out, is it still attached to the program, or is it going out into a separate part of your screen?
No, that's what he's talking about. Yeah, it's doing what you're asking.
It's part of the same program, but it's different. It's a different window completely. It's an independent window.
Yeah, well, that's good then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks awesome then. It's kind of hard to tell.
For my part, it's what I was asking for.
Yeah. Yeah, because this board can be put any place. You know, I've had people who have the board on one side. They have a three screen setup. They have the board on one monitor. They'll have their EA on another monitor, and they'll have their SSDs and possibly any other information on another monitor. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
So, you know, it ouch. Sorry. Got this guy. Yes, you're being very cute. But yeah, you know, so you know.
And the Zinti Raider appears.
Oh, you gotta
be careful. Welcome to the Meow Reverse.
Nom the kitty. Nom the kitty.
Yeah. Okay. But you know, it is, you know, configure. You know, obviously, there's a limitation to all configurability. There really is.
Okay. Right, unless you want to turn around and try to bit bang an interface and UI from absolute scratch, which is not what you're up to.
Exactly. In theory, I could make it a bunch of panes that are within a window, but I'm not exactly sure people want that. You know, that personally, I like the tab setup for the most part. You know, I definitely, when it comes to recording games, invariably what I do is I have the board is actually, you know, okay. Let's unfloat that. The board's not floating. And I usually get rid of the chat room down here because I'm recording and the chat portion doesn't really mean much. But I'll have like the SSDs on each side of the window and then move things around. So if you've ever seen any of my recordings of games that I show on one of the reviews, you'll see how I have it set up so that you can actually see like both SSDs or at least part of each SSD, the important parts, and possibly even the game control all at the same time. So you can see everything in that case.
Well, that's useful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The question, okay, because see, here's the one thing. Okay, I'm going to lock that back in. First thing is obviously, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, yeah, I know, Dave, the kitty steals the show. Frustrating. Maybe I should just have the kitty and me just sitting here and me just petting the kitty, and that's going to be the whole show. Somebody tells me I'd get a lot more views on YouTube if I did that.
How very Blofeld of you.
Probably accurate, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
I was thinking more Bond villain than, but yes.
Mr. Bond. I'll don't. I'm sorry. I forget what game company that is. Is it Mule Games or something like that?
Frugal Mule.
No.
Frugal Mule Games.
How to Kill James Bond, I think it was, or
yeah, it's Frugal Mule Games.
Okay, Google. Okay, Mule Games. Okay,
that's the one. Frugal Mule Games. Yeah, that's one of our regulars at the gamers convention. Yep. And he changed the name of it because he got a copyright strike on that game.
Oh.
I forget exactly what he's calling it right now. But you can probably find it by going to his website, frugalmulegames.com, which I think I have linked through the Last Gamer's a winner setup page, the events page.
Okay.
Yep. And he ran that game a few times.
Mr. Okay. Not in your freaking life. I went to Google, mulegames.com, and it's like, okay, you can buy that now for $995. It's like, no.
Wait, what? Are we looking at the right spot?
I'm probably spelling it wrong.
Probably not.
There you go. Try that one. Oh, he doesn't have it listed there. Yeah, he might just be selling that, too.
Oh, Frugal Mule Games. Okay.
Yeah.
If you look up just Mugal Games,
yeah, he might.
Frugal Mule Games does not show up. Ooh, that's bad. Okay. Oh, okay. That's why. Let's try that instead. Games. All I see is Stoned and. Yeah.
Yeah, those. That's not it. I think it may be one that he actually had in his collection.
Right.
Of different games, because he also ran Can-Am and other stuff like that. But yeah, he had a Bond game.
Yes.
That he ran. It's not his actual game.
Right.
But he
was
telling me that the guy who owns it had a copyright strike, and he had to change the name of it too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Yeah. I forgot. I'm trying to remember the exact the little dialogue.
Forgot. No, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I know the punchline is, you know, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond.
Ah, yes. The famous scene out of Goldfinger.
Yeah. This reminds me of, strangely enough, Doctor Who, and the returning of one of the actors as the Doctor. I want to say Dan Smith. I don't think that's right. Crap! Figure out the 14th Doctor is, I think, the same as the 11th Doctor. I think that's right. But actually, I like that that actor, the one that's going to be the 14th Doctor. I liked him because I liked him in there's one. It was a short TV series, which was about a murder that occurred, and he plays the detective that comes and tries to figure out who killed this person. You know that. I really liked him in that short TV series as the detective. So, of course, I also like Daniel Craig in Knives Out. So, I've not seen the sequel to Knives Out. I really should, because I truly enjoyed Knives Out. But. Anyhow, yeah, the goal of the online client is to actually upgrade it, make it a little more modern. Maybe in some case, I definitely need if anyone has suggestions.
Here's an off-the-wall idea for you.
Okay.
Yes, I have suggestions.
Okay.
Yes, I do too.
Okay.
That slate gray, maybe play around with some, like, slightly different colors. Like, you mean, a little darker, maybe metallic.
You mean this color here? That's the window? Is that the color? Is that the...
You pull it up.
Oh, sorry. You mean this?
Yeah, what I'm talking about is, and you can't see me pointing here, but up on the very top where it says hashtag SFB, the background color.
That I have no control over. I have no control over that. That's part of the look and feel.
Isn't that one, really?
Yeah, it's the look and feel of the window itself.
That should be in the theme definition.
Yeah.
Because you've got a theme selector and there's several different themes.
Yeah, they're look and feels of swing. I can check to see if I can modify that. I'm not sure if it, especially for this dark theme, if that allows you to tweak the colors that it uses or not. They might be hard coded into the look and feel. I could possibly look at, I think it's Nimbus is one that's really tweakable when it comes to things. I'd have to look.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't a method to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say just for a default looking at it thing, you know, a slightly metallic, slightly darker background to make that white pop out a little more. But another thing is if you can actually manipulate that the color scheme, what about doing like Empire color schemes? You know, take that for what you will. On the phone, shut that door, please. Thank you, Mr. Robot. Or Mr. Knight. I'm not.
Whoa, you have a hacker on your living in your house?
Yeah, I have a little guy who made himself a cardboard helmet and cardboard and shoulder pad and a weapon and a shield. Okay. We're still doing the cast podcast thing. If you want to stay in and watch, that's fine. So, want to raise your shield, that's fine too. Okay. So
tweaking the colors is one of the things you're suggesting.
Well, having a theme set up for each individual empire might actually be a good way to show what you're doing, particularly if you're going to be recording for online consumption, because then the Federation players and the Federation theme, the Klingon players and the Klingon theme, and so on and so forth, and you use the stock color combinations for those themes, and next thing you know, it just makes it instantly visible who's playing what.
True. Okay, so write that down, which is more color themes. No, I don't want to save it yet. Okay. So, okay, other than colors, anything else?
Well, the things that I was thinking about was you've already got the logging window. Can that be set so that you can automatically record a text file of the log as it's created? Or is that something you have to enable to turn on?
It already does it.
Okay. When you go to save an intra scenario save, like you're three turns and four impulses and you need to run a save for some reason. Is there a way that you could set up an export routine so that you get a human readable, human editable file with all of the data that is necessary to recreate that session at a later time?
Where do I have this? Okay, I have that located there. So this is.
The reason I ask this is because if you have a means by which you could start setting things up before your partner gets on for that complicated squadron engagement, and you get everything set up when they get on, you just get started. It would.
Right there.
It would make things a little easier. I suppose you are using plain text to record that information.
Right. All you do is right click, click save. Boom. And it'll save what's in the window here to a text file.
All right. How about re-importing it at a later time with a new window, with a new channel?
Load.
So you can load that from a text file?
And also, currently, the games, when you save them, they save the logs. They save this chat log.
Good.
Yeah, I added that like a year ago.
All these little bells and whistles that you don't necessarily discover right off the bat. Another thing it'd be good to do is to, the first time you set it up, or if there maybe have the client build an INI file, and if it doesn't find the INI file, go back and build one. And part of that process, go through a brief tutorial over how to disconnect the windows, set things up, and how to save and load games, how to log into the client. Just stuff that you really only need to deal with once. But if you need to go back and trash the INI file, it would help you go through it again.
Well, it already has that. It's called the user properties file. That's what saves all the settings, including the board settings here, where you say, you know, go here, options, and you go, okay, save current settings, and that actually saves it as the default for the next game room that you create of this type. So if I did this right now, if I went here and went, okay, options, save current. If I go over to here, create another room, to test. And you'll see that it automatically has the green on black with the chat room down here. So those,
okay. What I was suggesting was, is that if there's not a user preference file available when the program loads, that it runs a fire once script to build one. And as part of that process, you could probably include a few tutorial steps.
Okay. Well, the question is, when it comes to, when you say tutorial steps, what do you mean? Do you mean a wizard that goes through the actual UI and says, oh, do you want this on? Do you want this off? Blah, 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 blah.
No.
Okay.
No, I mean a slideshow of a dozen or so slides that shows you the things that you can do with it and how to do it. Kind of like the tutorial in question, kind of like what a lot of clients do when it detects that you're using the client for the first time.
Right. Understood.
It's just, several times this evening, you've been hit with suggestions and you scratched your head and going, hey, wait a minute, the client already does that.
Yep.
So that's why I was thinking maybe some sort of tutorial process to introduce the client to the new user might be something that would be of benefit.
Mm-hmm. Understood. So basically it'd be like a slideshow you
know. Right. It doesn't have to be something as complicated as the paperclip Microsoft wizards, but I was thinking something along the lines of just a few slides to show you the raw basics of how to work your way through the client, something that you don't even actually have to be logged in to do anything with, because let's face it, some people are going to struggle just to get through it. And if they can't even get to the point where they put in their user credentials, they might not stick with it.
Right. Understood. And that's one thing actually I wanted to change a little bit with the client itself is have it so people can have to change the way the demo account works is what I like to do. And what I like to do is have it so that what happens is that you register for an account, and that's considered a demo account there. That is and have it so people can do what have some kind of the notion that it's a demo account because of it's an unpaid account. Let's put it that way, an unpaid account. An unpaid account would be very limited, but then I'd have the person's contact information that I could then do the whole landing page thing and say, okay, well, welcome to SFB Online. Here's a landing page of maybe a tutorial or some other things about the client and so forth that you would actually the person would be sent an email about.
Right.
So. And I'd probably have to have that as part of that sign up process, which is by creating an account, you agree to have to actually let me send you emails. because Lord knows these days
probably a good idea.
With GDPR and all that kind of thing. To be honest, I'm so small, I don't fall under GDPR at all. You have to earn a certain amount of money, and have a certain number of users before that GDPR actually kicks in. So.
Oh.
Now, it doesn't mean I want to.
Thank goodness for small blessings.
Yeah, but still, I want as little information about you guys as possible. Email addresses? Yeah, I'd like to have an email address because I want to be able to contact you. And hopefully it's a valid email address because Lord knows. Before I kill you, Mr. Bond. Okay. that was the game. Doug found it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, cheap ass games.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, and name of the company. Mm-hmm. And he got a copyright strike and had to change the name of the game. But yeah.
Because of Mr. Bond.
I do what I can.
Because he said.
Yeah, it was because of the Mr. Bond, because of the whole.
Because it was based off of one of the Bond films, or a short dialogue within the Bond film. Gotta love it.
Well, the name was
right. Before I kill you, Mr. Bond.
Good.
Fun, really fun.
Gosh darn it! It is not coming up. That's weird. I just clicked on it, but yeah.
There's a comma between the U and underscore, and it's breaking the link.
Yep. There. Yeah, it's not pasting right. Okay. Copies, but it doesn't paste well. Yar.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
But if you use that as a search, it'll come up on Wiki.
Right. If I look for Before I Kill You, Mr. Bond, I should be able to find it on the Wikipedia page. But
yep, okay. And there it is. October 2015, they announced a Kickstarter releasing a new version of the game titled Before I Kill You, Mr. Spy.
Right.
But But it's based off of more than like one, so it's an homage to the Bond game, the Bond films at the time it was published.
Right. In 2000, following a cease and desist order from Metro Goldwyn Mayer, the game was taken out of print. It was reissued as renamed Total James Ernest totally renamed Spy Game. she was then announced a Kickstarter, a new version of the game titled Before I Kill You, Mr. Spy. It was released until 2016 and returned to the original 55 card deck size of the original game. So, for those of you who want a fun card game, that's a good one.
Okay. It sounds it.
Did you get to play that at?
No, actually, I didn't. I watched people play it. I never got an opportunity to actually play it myself. I expect you to die. Yes. yes. I'm not sure it was from Moonraker. No. I think it is from Goldfinger, Dave. We'll have to watch the movies and rewatch them and see where that dialogue is. But anyway, I think it's time to close up shop for this evening, my dear fellows. Correct, they're fellows this week. I'm not, you know, I know the whole thing is like, you know. Actually, that was funny. Went to my sports association. I had a meeting tonight. I joined them because they actually have archery, and it's a 5-minute drive from my house. So if when it gets warmer out, I might actually be able to practice shooting some arrows. You know, someplace that is a little closer than the archery club, which I belong to, which is like a 20-25 minute drive. So during lunch, you know, 5 minute, okay, I can do that. But anyway, it was this, they made a funny joke about that there are no more roosters because they all identify themselves as hens, you know?
So. Careful. Careful, you don't want to get shafted with that humor.
I'm sorry. If someone tells me that's offensive, I'd like to know how.
I did not say it was. I just said you need to be careful.
Oh, I understood. I will be careful. I will not go down.
Yeah, for some, not exactly.
Okay, well, gentlemen.
Of course, you know, getting the pun in about getting shafted while talking about archery practice is always fun, too.
when I think about shafted, I think about Robin Hood. Do you know what a Robin Hood is in archery?
Oh, that's where you, yeah.
With the shaft.
Well, yeah. You shoot one arrow, and then you shoot another arrow right in the same spot. So basically, you have, that arrow goes right into the arrow that you just shot before.
Yep.
So it destroys 2 arrows in one shot. Gotta love it.
And usually annoys the officials because it doesn't do very fun things to the target either.
True. That's one thing. I don't, to be honest... If that happens in a competition, I'm not sure how that would be scored.
I think MythBusters actually tackled that because it's one of those improbable things. And it came up as plausible. I forget how it came out. I think it was plausible.
Yeah.
The thing is,
from what I remember is from generally speaking, most archery federations handle it like this. If I fire and I hit a target, whatever score I have at that point is mine. If you come back later and you hit the same spot mine is and break or dislodge my arrow, I still get score and you get score, but it has something to do with tiebreaker points that doesn't pop up any other way.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about if you do it to yourself, because you can do it to yourself, because invariably,
right. If you do it to yourself, then both shots count for where they struck.
Right.
You don't lose for doing it.
Right. That's what I figured it would be. I don't know for a fact. I don't know the rules when it comes to that happening in a competition.
And it depends on which federation you're a part of, too, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, it also depends upon the competition. What I was just thinking about is Lancaster Archery, the classic, was just last month. No, actually, it wasn't last month. Was it last month or the beginning of this month? I forget which. I think it was the end of last month is what it was, which is... And I like watching it on YouTube, watching the finals, the final eight, you know, for the bare bow. That's my favorite competition is the bare bow. But anyway, I got shut down because I got to get some sleep. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Good night, Paul.
Thank you so much and all your help. Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. So, we had a little some suggestions when it comes to online client. If you have some suggestions yourself, if you see something, go, why are you doing it that way? That makes no sense. Please, 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 please send your suggestions to sfuoncall@gmail.com or andromedan@sfbonline.com. That would be fine, too. Any suggestions, I'm always open, especially when it comes to making it more modern. Actually, I really liked Jeff's initial one, which is the basically kind of head turn where you've complete your turn mode, because the client does track that. It knows what's your turn mode and then how many moves you've moved since your last turn. So it does track that, and actually if you look at the game control window, it will tell you. There's actually a number there. And also, if you try to turn before you're allowed to turn, it also will tell you, hey, you know, this is an illegal move. Are you sure you want to do this? So I think it does. If it doesn't, at the very least, it does keep track. That I know when it comes to the game control window, it does keep track. And it should know what your turn mode is based on your turn mode that's as part of the actual ship, because your turn mode is actually part of the data that's part of the ship definition. But anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.